Can't have failed to notice as you arrived at church this morning our field of poppies out the front of the church. There are around 1,850 poppies planted outside. There are 100 poppies cascading down from the lectern here, and around another 100 poppies around the church. So just over 2,000 poppies, all knitted or crocheted by people sitting among you today, people in our community, and some even further afield. But you may also have noticed that there are four different colours of poppies. Did you notice that? Yeah, four different colours. There are lots and lots of red ones. There are a patch of blue flowers. There's a patch of purple flowers. And then scattered in amongst the red are some white ones. And some of you might be wondering, why aren't they all just red? Because red, the red poppy is the symbol that we normally see people wearing around this time of year in remembrance. Well, yes, red for remembrance, the colour, the red with the little black flower, the poppies that grew in the fields after the war was over. And I always think the red of the poppy is such a vibrant colour. And whilst we might associate the red with the blood that was shed, but also maybe the vibrancy that came afterwards when the ground recovered and came back to life and had these beautiful poppies growing there. Some people you might see wear a white poppy instead of a red one, or you may actually see people wearing a red and a white poppy together. And these are known as peace poppies. And anybody wearing a white one is someone who may associate themselves with a campaign for peace. It's worn by different people for different reasons, but very much a hope that we may not end up in a situation where lives are lost in war again. So white for peace. Now, does anybody know what the purple ones are for? Do any of you know what the purple ones are for? Has anybody told you? The purple ones are in remembrance too, but these are in remembrance of all the animals that suffered and died during war. Especially during the First World War, a lot of horses were used, and a lot of horses died in the war too. And so there's a couple of charities who promote a purple poppy as a way of remembering all the animals that suffered as well. And finally, we've got the blue flower. Now this is actually not a poppy, this is a cornflower, a blue cornflower. And it's actually the symbol of remembrance used by the people of France. They have a blue cornflower, and it doesn't just there to commemorate those who died, it's there to commemorate those who are hurt or injured during the war. It's also there to commemorate the families that were affected by the war, and it's there to remember the children who are left orphans without mothers or fathers because of the war, and also to remember those who came back from the war. And many of us all have stories in our own family of people who came back from either the First World War or the Second World War or any of the conflicts since, and we know how that affected their lives. So it's good to remember them in our time of remembrance too. And so that's why we've got the different coloured poppies. Waste of muscle, waste of brain, waste of patience, waste of pain. Waste of manhood, waste of wealth, waste of beauty, waste of health. Waste of blood and waste of tears, waste of youth's most precious years. Waste of ways the saints have trod. Waste of glory, waste of God, war. So wrote Jeffrey Studdart Kennedy, also known as Woodbine Willie, perhaps the most famous British chaplain during the First World War. His nickname was a reference to the seemingly endless supply of Woodbine cigarettes he would produce and offer to the men he met. The colossal statistics of casualties and death on the Western Front and in all the theatres of war during 1914 to 18, together with the even greater circle of bereavement and grief, are so daunting as to be almost meaningless. Chaplains, padres, played an important role and continue to play an important role in the armed forces. I know from my own experience how much respect ex-servicemen and women have for their padre. As padre to the 2nd Battalion Highlanders Army Cadet Force, it is the ex-servicemen and women who understand exactly what myself and my colleagues' role is. The role of padre is to be alongside the people they serve with, to be a listening ear, an independent listener, a shoulder to cry on, a source of support. The best way to describe what we do is to say that we lurk with intent, there if needed. During the World Wars, padres like Woodbine Willie did more than lurk with intent. They went with the men and women into the darkest of places. They were right in the middle of the trenches, on the battlefield. They were quite extraordinary people. They were witnesses to all the horrors of war. Horrors like that witnessed by Captain John Crombie of the Gordon Highlanders, who wrote to a friend, "As for the morals of the war, they are horrible. For instance, listen to this. When you come to a dugout, you throw some smoke bombs down and then smoke the rest out with a smoke bomb, so that they must either choke or come out. Now, when they come out, they are half blinded and choked with poisonous smoke, and you station a man at the entrance to receive them. But as you only got a party of 9, it would be difficult to spare men if you took them prisoners. So the instructions are that these poor half-blinded devils should be bayoneted as they come up. It may be expedient from a military point of view, but if it had been suggested before the war, who would not have held their hands up in horror?" John Crombie was killed in 1917, aged just 20 years old. Another Scotsman, George MacLeod, became a captain in the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders. In 1918, he was awarded the Military Cross for his part in the infamous Battle of Passchendaele. This included an action in which he assumed command when his commanding officer was killed. And in the words of the official citation, he showed conspicuous gallantry and devotion to duty as adjutant, volunteering to go out and do duty in the hastily organised line of defence when no company officers remained. He carried out his duty as adjutant as well and was of the greatest assistance in keeping cohesion. In that action, 15 out of 20 officers were lost and 330 out of 400 men failed to return. He was also awarded the French Croix de Guerre. After the war, George MacLeod became a minister in the Church of Scotland and came to prominence as founder of the Iona community and as a foremost pacifist and campaigner for social justice. In light of that later career, the accounts of his time on the Western Front acquire a special significance. To his sister from the front at Ypres, in 1917, he wrote this: "When you think that next week will bring in the fourth year of the war, now and again one almost feels hopeless, and that is usually just before breakfast or some such other unprintable time. After dinner, one realises that there must be something that is going to turn up somewhere, somehow, which will clear the clouds away. I have heard it said that a man comes out of this war with a very real religion or no religion at all." That is a very common saying here nowadays, he went on. "Personally, I think that any man who sees this war must come out with a very real religion or cut his throat." The pain of war cuts deep. Families were and are forever changed. In this month's Life and Work magazine, a minister colleague describes how her family were affected. Barbara writes, France, 7th of September, 1918. Dear Mrs. Quigley, I'm taking the liberty of writing this note to express my deepest sympathy with you in the loss of your husband, who died fighting for the cause and liberty on 27th August. D.N. Craig, 2nd Lieutenant. My grandfather, Thomas, or Tommy Quigley, was an Ayrshire man of good Catholic stock. He was a member of the Royal Flying Corps, the forerunner of the RAF, and yet he is recorded as having served with the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, and he died as a member of the 1st 6th Battalion Seaforth Highlanders, a regiment raised in Dornoch, the opposite side of the country. This letter signalled a huge change in the life of Mary Ellen Quigley's young family. There was little support for widows and orphans, and she was left with a three-year-old daughter, Mary, and a son of 13 months, George. Mother Quigley had to provide for her family, and so she ran a number of bakeries and dairies in Glasgow. Her baby son was sent to live with brethren grandparents in Blantyre, and the link with the Roman Catholic Church was lost. Fast forward 25 years to the Second World War, and that little girl, Mary, received a similar letter saying that her husband had perished by what we would call now friendly fire, leaving her with three small children, whilst her baby brother, George, was fighting his way through Italy. George married a Yorkshire Congregationalist, and I was born in 1953. A snapshot of one family defined by their men at war, she concludes. And it is for families like the Quigleys, young men like George MacLeod, forever changed by war, for padres like Woodbine Willie, that we never forget, and each year come the 11th day of the 11th month, we remember. We remember lives given, lives changed forever, and the sacrifices made by many in the pursuit of peace. Today marks 100 years since the signing of the armistice. And yet, you might ask, 100 years and what have we learned except to kill and maim even more? To gaze as millions flee their lands and their livelihoods with nowhere to call home. To watch as nations ramp up their arsenals amidst war of words. 100 years and we remember the stench of fear and death, the lives lost, the bodies damaged, the minds destroyed, the families broken by humanity's wanton desire to win at all costs. 100 years and 100 more. Lord, we must never forget. Not just the sacrifice and the suffering, not just the scars and the loss, but there is no victory without humility, no winner without grace, no justice without peace. Our third reflection this morning comes from the words of Woodbine Willie in a poem he wrote entitled The Suffering God. If he could speak, that victim torn and bleeding, caught in his pain and nailed on the cross, has he to give the comfort souls are needing? Could he destroy the bitterness of loss? Once and for all, men say he came and bore it. Once and for all, set up his throne on high. Conquered the world and set his standard o'er it. Dying that once, that men might never die. Yet men are dying, dying soul and body. cursing the God who gave them their birth. Sick of the world with all its sham and shoddy, sick of the lies that darken all the earth. Peace, we were pledged, yet blood is ever flowing. Where on earth has peace ever found? Men do but reap the harvest of their sowing. Sadly, the songs of human reapers sound. Sad as the winds that sweep across the ocean, telling to earth the sorrow of the sea. Vain is my strife, just empty, idle motion. All that has been is all that is to be. So on the earth the time waves beat in thunder, bearing wrecked hopes upon their heaving breasts. Bits of dead dreams and true hearts torn asunder, flecked with red foam upon their chrismon chests. How can it be that God can reign in glory, calmly content with what his love has done? Reading unmoved the piteous, shameful story, all the vile deeds done men do beneath the sun. Are there no tears in the heart of the eternal? Is there no pain to peace the soul of God? Then must he be a fiend of hell infernal, beating the earth to pieces with his rod. Or is it just that there is naught behind it, nothing but forces purposeless and blind? Is the last thing, if mortal man can find it, only a powder wandering as the wind? Father, if he, the Christ, were thy Redeemer, truly the first begotten of the Lord, then must thou be a sufferer and a healer, pierced to the heart by the sorrow of the sword. Then must it mean not only that thy sorrow smote thee once that upon the lonely tree, but that today, tonight, and on the morrow, still it will come, O gallant God, to thee. Swift to its birth in spite of human scorning, hastens the day the storm clouds roll apart, rings o'er the earth the message of the morning, still on the cross the Saviour bears his heart. Passionately fierce, the voice of God is pleading, pleading with men to arm them for the fight. See how those hands majestically bleeding call us to rout the enemies in the armies of the night. Not to the work of sordid, selfish saving of our own souls to dwell with him on high, but to the soldier's splendid, selfless braving, eager to fight for righteousness and die. Peace does not mean the end of all our striving. Joy does not mean the drying of our tears. Peace is the power that comes to souls arriving up to the light where God himself appears. Joy is the wine that God is ever pouring into the hearts of those who strive with him, lightening their eyes to vision and adoring, strengthening their arms to warfare glad and grim. So would I live and not in idle resting, stupid as swine that wallow in the mire. Fain would I fight and be forever breasting danger and death forever under fire. Bread of thy body give me for my fighting, give me the drink thy sacred blood for wine. While there are wrongs that need me from the righting, while there is warfare splendid and divine. Give me for light the sunshine of thy sorrow. Give me for shelter the shadow of thy cross. Give me to share the glory of thy morrow. Gone from my heart the bitterness of loss.